Without any further ado, I really am excited to have this gentleman on the call with us. His name is Coach Bob Starkey. Coach Starkey is well regarded as one of the top minds and hardest workers in all of college basketball. He's now in his 22nd season at Louisiana State University, having worked on both the staff of the women's and men's basketball programs. Coach Starkey has been a part of all five of the Lady Tigers NCAA Final Fours. He was groomed on the high school level in West Virginia. Coach Starkey has earned success at all levels, however, high school, NAIA, and NCAA levels. As an assistant coach for Dale Brown on the LSU men's basketball staff from 1990-96, Coach Starkey also participated in four NCAA tournaments. And as the acting head coach for LSU during the 2007 NCAA tournament run, Coach led the Lady Tigers to the program's fourth straight NCAA Final Four. Impressive, to say the least. Coach Starkey, who considers himself a full-time student of the game, has written numerous articles, books, and is a very active sharer of information, both on basketball, X's and O's, strategies and tactics, but also on motivation and athlete development. He's one of his books that we'll get a chance to hear from him on in the content around it is something that the book was named The Art of Being an Assistant Coach. Definitely an art, and we're going to hear from Coach Starkey on that. So really excited to have you on the call, Coach. Thank you so much for your time.
This is an amazing concept that you guys have brought forth to help get some information out to coaches, and I'm really excited about being a part of it.
Well, thank you so much. I know it's you're in the midst of your season, your conference season, especially a pretty intense time, to say the least. And you played a game earlier today against Arkansas, and it was a tough two-point loss. I understand they came back from down four.
I think it was down five, actually. We had a couple breakdowns defensively. We had an opportunity to separate ourselves and let one of the really good players, Watkins, get out loose for a three, and that really got him some momentum, a shot in the arm. And you just can't do that when you're on the road in the SEC. When you have an opportunity to put a little cushion between you and the opponent, you have to take advantage of it. So certainly hats off to Arkansas, though. Their kids played very well and hung in there and made plays when they needed to.
Coach, what's the message to the team after, you know, it was a long week of practice for you. Now you go into some tough games coming up. I think it's South Carolina followed by Tennessee. What's the message in the locker room to the girls after the game?
Well, I always think, depending on whether you win or lose, you have to measure your message. Sometimes you can, after a difficult loss, you can be a little bit too hard on the team. That may not be the best environment for teaching. We just spoke to them very quickly about, you know, lost opportunities and, you know, that we played hard, but, you know, playing hard is a given. You know, playing well is the goal. And probably the best thing that we could do is get back home and then take a look at the film and then begin reviewing what we needed to do. We'll actually have Monday off, which is our mandatory day off, and then we will start Tuesday in the film room looking at some clips of the Arkansas game, both positive and negative, and try and clean up a couple of those things. You know, when you get into SEC play, you know, so many of the games are decided by a couple of possessions. And the thing is, you know, you never know when those possessions are going to occur. These particular possessions came at about the 3 or the 4 minute mark. So, those are the things that we'll try, you know, when we come back to the film room, talk to them about. You know, you just can't take a break when you have an opportunity to distance yourself on the road.
And now going into this week, as you prep for your final two conference games, what's going to be the emphasis? What will you spend your time on in practice?
Well, first of all, we'll just play it one game at a time. You know, we have South Carolina on Thursday, and then we follow that up with Tennessee on the road. So Tennessee on the road itself is a daunting task, so we don't want to put the cart before the horse. We'll begin by trying to correct some of the things that we did against Arkansas before moving on to South Carolina. South Carolina runs a lot of dribble drive stuff, so we'll spend a lot of time breaking down in practice, defending the dribble, and giving some early help and early support, some quick recovery, and try and build on that. And then we're going to try and do some things to help our offense. We've been very good defensively. We actually lead the SEC in defense. Did a heck of a job today, held Arkansas to 42, but was only able to score 40. We're having some some opportunities that we're not taking advantage of from the free throw line, and get some good looks early and not knocking them down. So we like to break down a lot. We do a lot of teaching and practice, and that won't change this week.
Okay. I do want to come back to talking about teaching and what your practices do like this time of year, and, you know, the balance between strategies and tactics and also fundamentals. But before we get there, I wanted to come back to you mentioned, you know, defensively, you guys are doing a very good job and you're tops in the SEC. I think a lot of coaches spend a lot of time on defense as well and are having successes, but probably like you also struggle with scoring the ball. Is there, in your experience, anything you can do at this point in the season to help your team score points?
Well, we'll try and take advantage of some scouting. You know, we'll try and look at a breakdown or a weak area of our opponent and see if we can attack that a little bit. The frustrating thing today was that one of the things we wanted to do was get to the free throw line, which we did, and we just didn't finish our free throws. I think we were 10 for 18, and about three of those were front end of one-on-one. So one of the things that we talked about doing to help our offense, we did in terms of getting the free throw line, but then we just didn't finish there. I think whenever you're having trouble offensively, you got to put a premium on taking care of the basketball because possessions become really valuable. If you have a team like us that doesn't necessarily shoot the ball well and we don't quite have a really good low post threat, then we got to be patient, make teams guard us a little bit more, and see if we can get a better shot to a better shooter.
So shot selection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not that you should never have good shot selection. I'm a big believer that regardless of how talented or how fast or how slow you play, shot selection should be an element of your offense, but it's probably a little bit more defined when you don't have as many good shooters as you'd like to have.
And what types of things are you guys doing to influence shot selection?
Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to make sure that the team understands what a good shot is. And you know, sometimes there's some feelings that get hurt there. You know, it might be a good, you know, things like time is going to be involved. A shot that might be a good shot early in the ball game might not be a good shot late in each half when you're ahead or behind. You need to explain to them those situations. There's always going to be a really good player that you want to give a green light to when they got an open look, but there's the other player who's a decent shooter, but you want her or him to understand that reversing the basketball, playing a little bit longer, might get a better shot for another player. But I think it's very important, the communication part. You absolutely have to make sure it's defined. You talk to players individually and talk to your team. One of the things we'll do is we'll stop practice after a shot, and I'll look at one of my players who did not shoot the ball and ask them about a shot that was taken and ask them, are you happy with that shot? You know, is that the type of shot that our team wants right here? And then I think what's really more important is when they say yes or no is you ask them why. Why is really big when you're teaching. Kids have to understand why you want something done or why you don't want something done. And that explanation of why really helps them to understand and allows them to execute a little bit better. So one of the things that we'll do is we'll tell everybody that the shot is a team shot, regardless of who's shooting it. And I think it's really important for kids to accept shot selection, that you make the other components of your offense important. Like, you know, obviously we've got a really good player, Lissandra Barrett, who's a second team All-SEC selection last year, and scores the ball very well. Well, when we're watching film or we're in practice, we're going to go out of our way to compliment the player that screened for her to get her open and the player that got her the ball in the right spot of the floor so she could shoot. All those things are important. And if you just talk shot selection and then make a big deal out of the person that shoots the ball, then the other players don't feel like they're going to be involved in the offense. So you got to communicate it, but you also got to make all the other roles involved in the shot. You got to make those players feel important about what they did, because really and truly without them, you don't get the quality shot that you want.
I think that's a really good point you raise, and probably one that's often missed is emphasizing not just the person taking the shot, but all the other people who contribute to what leads to that shot. That's great. I wanted to come back to practices. This is, I know, one that is an area that, from the questions that have come in to us, has been something that a lot of people are interested in. Can you speak to a little bit about, you know, what does an LSU practice look like for you guys this time of year, strategies versus, you know, tactics and fundamentals?
Well, I think the first thing, I think, practice is singularly the most important thing that you do in constituting the structure of your program. You know, I think really good programs create culture. There's a certain culture. You know, you need to have a good team or you can have a good program. And you should certainly strive for the program to do that. You create a culture. And I think practice is the first and most important place, you know, that you can really do that. And so the first thing that you do, I think, is practices have to be well thought out, well planned. You know, there's a lot of times we may spend more time planning a practice than we'll actually take to execute it. And I think there's a lot of thought involved in that. Everything from the length of the practice, to the particular type of breakdown teaching drills, to the attitude that the coaching staff takes to practice. I think that's very important. You know, one of the things that I learned from Don Meyer is there's two people that can't have a bad practice. One is the coach and the other one is your captain. Those, they have to be on every single practice. And, I think that's one of the things as a coaching staff you talk about. I think we do some things that are really good at practice. One of the things that we do is we have something called an emphasis of the day. And that emphasis of the day could be a fundamental thing or it could be an intangible like enthusiasm or communication. Like I said, it could be, basketball related. Maybe it's blockout. Maybe it's, cut to create help. Maybe it's, low post feeds, take care of the basketball, those type of things. But we'll pick one, and we'll do it from one of two thoughts. Either it'll be something that we didn't do very well the day before, or maybe it's something that we're going to need to do well the next day when we play an opponent. Like, for instance, you know, we're getting ready to play South Carolina, and they're really good off the dribble. So maybe our emphasis of the day when we come to practice Tuesday will be ball defense. And when the kids come into practice, there's going to be a piece of paper in all their lockers with the emphasis of the day. And then when they come out to practice on the floor, these papers are going to be up all over the floor to remind them. And then we start practice every day with what we call a pre-practice segment. And that pre-practice segment is going to run anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. So we're going to do that from the first day of October all the way through until we're finished with postseason play. And when we do theirs, we break the team into small groups and we do a lot of fundamental work. So we're getting fundamental work every single day before we get to the main portion of our practice. Now, in that fundamental segment, that pre-practice, there's going to be some drills involved in that emphasis of the day. As soon as that pre-practice is done, we're going to come to the middle of the floor, clap it up, and we're going to stop and we're going to review what the emphasis of the day is. We're going to talk to them about why, I go with that word again, why it's so important, and then we're going to break right out of there with one big team drill for that emphasis of the day. And then we'll go through our main course of the practice, but the entire course of the practice, our coaching staff is really going to be watching to see if we're doing that particular emphasis. And that's really been a great thing for us throughout the years in making sure every day we're going to get better in one particular area. We're going to create a streamline of focus on one phase of the game every single day in practice from what we communicate as coaches to the various drill work. And that's been really good for us.
And is there a way that you measure that emphasis of the day over the course of that practice?
No, there are, depending on what it is. We're big believers in, I think stats are very important. But not necessarily the stats that most people think about. Certainly we keep a shot chart at practice. We keep rebounds at practice, but there's some other things that we do. For instance, one of the things we do every day at practice is we keep a deflection chart. That's very important for our defense. We also chart screens, because we run a motion offense. If it's a particular emphasis, we might create a stat for that day just so we can keep a numerical number, for the kids to see whether or not they're actually achieving something positive with that goal. So certainly there's a lot of times where we'll try and apply a stat to it.
And is there a way coming out of that you, is there a recognition that comes out of it? Is there some way beyond the practice itself that it carries over off the court in terms of acknowledging who's done what well and who needs to improve in what area? Basically, I guess the question is, how do you hold them accountable and reward them for it?
Well, I think a big part of that comes with video. We're real big believers in video. We'll watch a little video before and after every practice, and we make sure that we go out of our way to show positive clips as well as negative clips. You know, we're coming off a loss today to Arkansas, and Tuesday certainly we'll watch video clips of things that we did not do well, but I can also guarantee there'll be a segment of video of positive clips to make sure that they're seeing what they do well so they'll continue to do that. And we do the same thing. We film every single practice, and we watch a lot of practice video, and I think that's very important. But I think there's other things coaches can do. I know 1 year we wanted to make a big deal out of rebounding. We had not been a very good rebounding team. So what we said was that after every game, you know, the sports information director comes up and usually tells you, you know, he wants the leading scorer, the second leading scorer to go to the press room. And what we did that particular year is we told our team we didn't care what this particular player did in terms of scoring or assists, but the leading rebounder was going to go to the press room every single game. And we, you know, if the media didn't say anything or ask a question, the head coach was going to explain why they were there, and we made a big deal out of it. We chart screens, a great deal. Screens are very, very important in our offense. And 1 year we had a kid named Wendland Jones who was she was an excellent screener, took great pride in it. And of course we went out of our way to talk to our booster club, the media, anybody who wanted to listen. The great job that she did of screening, the person she screened for was Simone Augustus, who was a 2-time Wade Trophy winner. Well, when Simone received her Wade Trophy, one of the first people she thanked was Wendland Jones for the screen. Well, Wendland Jones' senior year, she had some business cards printed up that said, Wendland Jones, professional screener. And she's passing those things out. And as a coach, you know, that makes you feel pretty good. Sure, it's funny, but it also shows that you've made a particular role important to a player, and they've taken pride in it. So there's all kinds of little things I think you can do with stats and video and with the way you emphasize things to the media and the team and your boosters that can make all those things important and make the kids feel rewarded.
I think that's fantastic. I love the idea of the business card.
Well, she came up with that by herself, and you know, she comes in for alumni weekend, and she's still got a couple that she'll pass out, so it's a pretty cool thing.
That is great. The limits of what you do are the limits of your creativity as a coach in terms of acknowledging them, and obviously she took pride in it. That's great. I'd read you had mentioned something about disadvantage drills. What are those for you guys, and why are they so important?
Well, disadvantage drills for us is going to be anything that we could do to make the drill more difficult than it would normally be. For instance, if we're in pre-practice and we're doing some stationary ball handling, we're going to use two basketballs instead of one. We've got a 2-on-0 passing drill that we do, and we use a heavy trainer ball and a tennis ball. And where the kids are down their stance and they're doing right-handed push passes, and we're making them stay in their stance nice and low, call out the name of the person they're passing it to, and ripping the ball through there nice and quick about chest high, and then in the middle I'm going to yell change, and they've got to go from right-handed push pass to a left-handed push pass. And again, they're using a tennis ball and a heavy trainer ball, different size, different weight, different feel, really working on their hands. And we've had some perimeter players that have got so good that we've actually added a third ball, which is a basketball, and they've got three balls going in a circular fashion. So anything that we can do that puts them at a disadvantage that stretches them, I think is really important. And we'll do that in individual drills. We'll do it with our team stuff, for instance, to work on our motion. We'll do 4-on-4, 5-on-5, no dribble, which really puts a premium on cutting and screening and being strong with the basketball. It's a drill that they don't like very much, and I found throughout the years if they don't like it, it must be a pretty good drill. We'll do some 5-on-4 to work on our defense. We have a drill called 5-on-4 open perimeter where four players are guarding five. That extra player we have wearing a red penny, and you know, he or she's floating around the perimeter. Whenever they get the ball, they're looking to drive it, which is really putting some pressure on your help, and then you got to recover. We do a drill that we got from Pat Summit at Tennessee called 3-on-3 two bounce. It's a full court drill where three players are trying to move the ball down the floor against three defenders, but each player's only allowed two dribbles. So you push the ball two dribbles. You can't throw the ball behind you, so your teammates have to sprint the floor and then come back and meet the pass. And it really puts a lot of pressure on the offense. Every now and then, if you really want to get after them, you go 3-on-3, one bounce. That's a pretty good drill. We use clock a lot in drills. One of the things we do on the women's side, obviously, is we have a male scrimmage team, and obviously they're a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker, a little bit faster. So I think anything that you can do to make a drill a little bit tougher that stretches your team. But I think you got to do it in a positive way too. You know, it's just not enough to go 5-on-4 open perimeter and the offense is just, you know, beating your defense. You've got to work to get to a point where you're doing some good things, and then I think it's imperative for you as a coach to stop and say, wow, that's a heck of a possession. Do you guys realize that for 25 seconds right there, you defended 5 male practice players with just 4 defenders? You guys did a great job there, and then show them some of those things. I think it's really important when you compliment a player that you tell them why. I'm going to go back to that why again. You just don't tell the player good pass. That may not register, may not click with them as to what they did, so they'll do it again. You say, hey, that was a heck of a pass because you did a nice job of setting it up and throwing it away from the defender to the outside. You've got to be detailed in your compliment for it to register so that the player want to repeat it, if that makes sense.
That absolutely does. Being specific, that's great.
Yeah, it's really important with the disadvantage drills, because the disadvantage drills can be tough. You know, and it's important that the kids know that they're disadvantage drills, you know. And so when they do have some success, it's very important that you point it out.
Excellent. Well, Coach, we're getting quite a few questions that are coming online, and I'm sure some of them are going to dig deeper into this area of practice planning and the content and some of the technical elements and maybe some X's and O's. Before we get to those questions that are coming in, I did want to come to a topic that you've spoken on and written about, and not too many people address it. That's the art of being an assistant coach. Can you share a little bit about why this is an important topic for you, what the feedback has been that's come in from your research on it?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I was working on Dale Brown's staff, you know, about 20, 25 years ago. And, you know, I'm one of those guys who's buying the books and the videos and going to the clinics and, you know, anything that might make me a little bit better. And then working for a guy like Coach Brown, you're just always motivated to be the best you can be. And it came across to me that there really wasn't anything out there directed at that time towards an assistant coach. Everything was towards head coaches or it was X and O in nature. So I thought it might be a good project to try and research it. So what I did was I sent out a survey to about 120 head coaches around the country. The majority of them were basketball coaches, but there were some other sports in there. I know Lou Holtz, who was at Notre Dame at the time, responded, and Skip Bertman, who was a baseball coach at LSU, responded, but got just some tremendous feedback from the survey. And what I did with the survey was I listed about 8 things that I thought were important and asked each head coach to rate them in the order of importance. And then please explain why they picked the number one pick that they picked. And then I ask them another question. Please list one thing that I inadvertently left out that you think would make for a good assistant coach. And then after I got the surveys back, you know, I took the time when I could to either call or visit some of these coaches to get some more in-depth. And it turned out to be such a good project that I wrote a book about it some years ago. And some of the things that I found out, the top 2 things that head coaches were looking for were loyalty and work ethic. You know, nothing about talent, nothing about pedigree, nothing about intelligence. They wanted hardworking guys that were loyal to them and their program. That made me feel good because I was certainly one of those guys that didn't have a lot of talent or a great pedigree. I came from a small town in West Virginia and wasn't good enough even to play high school basketball. So the thing that I also brought away from it was the thing that I had left off that overwhelmingly was picked by the head coaches was initiative. You know, that's your ability to go out and do things without the head coach having to tell you. And it was a great project, and I got so much knowledge. It was one of those things that I learned more, I promise you, than anybody that read the book. It was just a great journey for me to go through some of the things that I learned.
Coach, having been a head coach and and also obviously a lead assistant for quite some time. I know from having spoken to and worked with other assistant coaches and having been that place myself, one of the things you struggle with as an assistant is how you give them the information. Maybe you've got an idea, or maybe you've observed something on court in practice or in a game, and it's just a matter of, you know, finding a balance. What's your recommendation to assistant coaches in terms of best finding that balancing act between making suggestions and withholding feedback?
I think the most important thing is understanding who you work for. Every head coach is going to have a different personality. And I think if you first come on board as assistant coach, you know, and I've done that several times in my career, the thing that I like to do is pretty much keep my mouth shut and learn as much as I can early on, not just from how he teaches, but how he wants it taught, how he or she wants the information. And then I think it becomes a natural progression. You know, the majority of coaches I've worked for want their assistant coaches to share what they see and what they think. Now Coach Brown used to have this great philosophy. You know, you were not allowed to go into Coach Brown's office and tell him about a problem unless you also had a solution or a suggestion to solve it. I thought that was a great philosophy. You could come in and say, Coach, you know, so-and-so has an attitude of practice. You know, that wouldn't work. You know, you had to go and say, so-and-so has attitude of practice. I think it'd be good if we brought him in the office and talked to him and maybe show him some film so he can maybe visually see what we're talking about. But I really like that concept. You couldn't come to Coach Brown with a problem unless you had a solution. Because it's real easy for assistant coaches to point out everything that's wrong. But you know, good head coaches want their assistant coaches to be problem solvers.
And a lot of that ties back into the idea of taking some initiative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point.
Excellent. Wanted to ask you about getting ahead. You know, a lot of coaches, there are a lot of coaches on the line right now who are high school coaches who have ambitions. Maybe they're an assistant coach and they aspire to become the head coach at the high school level, or perhaps they're a head coach at high school level and they want to move up and perhaps coach post-secondary level. What's your advice for them in terms of making that next step, developing?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are involved in there. The first part is just working real hard and learning your craft so that when the opportunity comes, you're ready. The next part is to network. You know, I came from a small town in West Virginia to where, you know, I worked for Dale Brown at LSU and then Sue Gunner and now Van Chancellor. And the number one reason is because I worked summer basketball camps. I'd work anywhere from 7 to 9 basketball camps every summer. And working these camps, I would get to know so many coaches. I had an opportunity to be an assistant coach at Marshall University under Judy Southern because she got to know me because I worked her camp. Dale Brown hired me, and later Sue Gunner hired me, and because I had previously worked both of their camps, and created a relationship. They saw how hard I worked and how much I wanted to be a good coach, and those opened a lot of doors for me. So I think making contacts is really important, but you also have to be evolving in your profession. You know, a great line is, you know, who you know gets you the job, what you know keeps you the job. So it's a little bit of both. Work to become better at your craft, but make sure you're meeting a lot of people along the way.
How have you mentioned evolving your craft. I've got my wheel spinning on it from other coaches having said, hey, the game has changed. Maybe camps are, they're no longer a valid way to network and meet people and learn and develop. What would be your take on, you know, how the game has changed? Is doing the camp circuit still a valid way to get better?
Oh, certainly. I think if you're working the right camp for the right coach, you know, especially college camps, there's a lot of great college coaches out there that take pride in running their camps. So you can learn. You know, I can tell you, it was a great experience for me to go to Old Dominion University when Marianne Stanley was the coach there. Marianne Stanley taught me a lot of basketball. The first time I interviewed for a women's job, she made a call for me. I met Debbie Ryan working her camp, which, by the way, is how I met Dina Evans, was through Debbie Ryan's basketball camp. So there's still a lot of good camps to go out there. And don't go to camp to get a college job. You know, go to a camp, to work and do a good job and meet people, and then everything else takes care of itself. But there's certainly a lot of other ways. I would suggest if you want to be involved in the college game, go watch college practices. It's a great place to make contacts and to learn how the college game is executed at practice. We have a lot of high school coaches and even junior high coaches that come and watch us practice. Go to coaching clinics. You know, to this day, you know, I'm going to go to two coaching clinics every year. I'm always going to go to the Nike clinic right up here in northern Mississippi at Tunica. Number one, it's a great clinic. There's always great speakers, but there's a ton of high school coaches there that I enjoy getting to know and talking basketball, and a lot of great contacts there. One of the things I like to do to grow as a coach is every year you have college teams that take these summer tours internationally. You know, they're going to France, they're going to Australia, so the NCAA allows them 10 days to practice. So I will get a list of these colleges that are going, and I'll go watch one of them practice for 2 or 3 days. And it's a great opportunity for me to grow as a coach and watch how another college program practices, because obviously during the season, you know, we just don't have the time to go do that. So there's a lot of ways out there. You know, we talked about social media. Twitter and Facebook's a great way to make contacts in the college game, as well as to learn things. So I do think the game's changed, but I just think there's more opportunities.
The idea of attending those practices before those international tours, one I hadn't heard of or thought of, and I think probably we want to resonate with a lot of other coaches as well, because like you, they are they're busy with their high school teams or college teams as well. So that off season period where a team's doing some hard prep before they went overseas or to Canada, because there are a lot of teams going to Canada now as well, would be really advantageous for coaches to capitalize on for professional development.
It really is. I'll give you a couple of quick examples. About 5 years ago, I went to Duke and watched Gail Gustenkors, who I think is just one of the best coaches in the game. And she was tinkering with her secondary break. She was doing some things with her secondary break in regards to they would start the game with a particular secondary break, and then the next time out they would go to another one. And so she was experimenting a little bit with it. It was great watching her team work on this and then talk to her staff about it. And we're a motion team. A couple years ago, I went and watched Sherry Cole at Oklahoma, who's one of the great motion coaches. And those are just a couple examples, you know. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a big-name, big school. You know, I've got a real good friend of mine, Jim Boone, at Tusculum College in Greenville, Tennessee, who does a great job. And I went and watched his team practice as they got ready for an international tour. There are some great coaches. There's a couple of high school coaches here in Louisiana that when we get a day off, I'll go over and watch them, not because I'm recruiting a kid, but just because I like to watch them practice. So I think you shouldn't have to necessarily think you got to go watch, you know, one of these elite programs to learn some good basketball or make some contacts as well. There's a lot of good small college coaches and high school coaches and junior college coaches that you could really learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you're a big advocate as well of, I can often refer to it as cross-training, but also studying good coaches in other sports.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm blessed here at LSU. I mean, every sport here is outstanding. You know, Skip Bertman was the baseball coach, the athletic director, and learned a lot from him. When I coached on the NAIA level at West Virginia State College, you know, back in those days, you couldn't just have one title. So I was the assistant men's basketball coach, and I was also the assistant sports information director for baseball. And I got to ride in some old beat up vans with the West Virginia State baseball team, and they had a coach there who's still there, a guy named Cal Bailey, who was absolutely one of the best teachers I've ever been around. I learned more sitting in that dugout than any clinic or book or video I've ever read, and he's became one of my mentors. You know, just watching how he handles people and situations and his organization, his thought process. You know, he did something with hitting that I think is really good when you think about shooting with the basketball. He would not allow me to give the players their batting averages. He kept a stat. If you hit a line drive, you got a 6. Maybe not a line drive, but pretty hard, you got a 5. Pretty good fly ball, you got a 4 all the way down. And so all he wanted to do was gauge on how hard you hit the ball. And when I first asked him about it, he said with hitters could come out and hit four line drives. I mean, really great at-bats, but hit them right at somebody 0 for 4, and the next day in batting practice, they're tinkering with their swing. So he wanted them just to concentrate on the process as opposed to the result. And we do that sometimes with shooting. We talk about the quality of a shot, not necessarily where the shot goes in or not. So, but that's just an example of me learning from a really good baseball coach.
I love that idea. Thanks for that share. I really do like that one. Well, Coach, I don't want to monopolize the time. Part of our intention in terms of creating these coaches' clinics, as we affectionately refer to them, is giving others access to some of the top minds in the game. And with that, I want to invite Lindsay Fennelly, one of our course directors, to jump on the call. She's mentioned that there's been quite a few questions that have come in on the website through the chat room.